It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And one of our good friends here that's unafeared here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. That individual that's unafeared is Howard Wooldridge. Now, Howard Wooldridge is one of the co-founders of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Now he's in Washington, D.C., lobbying, you know, telling them what's what for the drug. He's a drug policy specialist with Citizens Opposing Prohibition. Now, you go to the page, it's citizensopposingprohibition.org, and you got Howard and some other people wearing shirts. Cops say legalize pot. Ask me now. Nurses say legalize pot. Moms say legalize. Dads say legalize pot. Everybody says this except politicians, and they're just not because I don't know. That's what we're going to ask Howard. Howard, you're in Washington, D.C., man. What's their argument?
Well, here in the belly of the beast, power, money, and ego reign supreme, as you're aware. And so my voice, the voice of law enforcement on Capitol Hill, does carry credibility. We are making progress. And I'm actually optimistic that within a couple of years, we can end the federal prohibition of all drugs, starting with marijuana.
Why are you optimistic? I mean, where does that come from? There's some big bad boys making some big bad money on this. Seriously?
Yeah, money is and political blackmail are tough in this town. My profession certainly plays the political blackmail card of telling members of Congress, if you don't support more money for enforcing prohibition, you know, going after Willie Nelson and Charlie Sheen, etc., we'll tell people back home you're soft on drugs. And, of course, Big Pharma is also putting out their money to keep the congressman in line to not allow God's medicine to be grown in their backyard like Thomas Jefferson did. But the reason I'm optimistic, Ernie, is the generations are passing. The persons who believe Richard Nixon that marijuana was worse than any drug out there are passing. And also, not least, all states except for North Dakota are running out of money. They can't afford these huge 2 million people in prison for prohibition-related reasons and fund their junior colleges, Medicaid, etc. So the crunch of money is reducing the thin blue line, and therefore people are making hard choices what to do, chase Willie Nelson or go after pedophiles. So all of this gives me optimism that within a few years we will see this begin to end in the United States.
Okay, now let me go ahead and make a statement here. You can tell me how far off I am.
Okay.
BS, man. I mean, well, let me preface it a little bit. Okay, this is what I look at this, and you go, you know, of course it's cheaper for us to pay, heck, you know, twice the price for a barrel of oil that we didn't have to have trillions of dollars of war to protect to get, quote, cheap oil, okay?
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not... It's always, it's too expensive to house it. It's too expensive. Heck, that's the reason why they do it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going, you know, to think that there's going to be some kind of an economic argument that's going to win the day, it doesn't work that so far. I haven't seen it. Because what happens is it's not about it's cheaper to just go buy the oil. Because I remember we did a thing years ago, and the war had just started, and I did the math just because I could. I don't need to do it anymore. I get it. But
right.
What happened, it was
like $137 a barrel of oil above the cost of the barrel of oil that we spent to go get the cheap barrel of oil. And I'm going, it's not about, you know, saving money for the American people. It's about who gets the money. It's about how it's dedicated, reallocated, you know, dispensed out amongst the whatever. We have stories right now in Freedom's Phoenix that are talking about the United States military, the Pentagon, is offering to give whatever military equipment local law enforcement needs. Here it is. What do you want?
Well, sure. We're becoming much more paramilitary. It scares me that so many police officers now go on duty to just do regular, quote, protect and serve in SWAT gear. This is very disturbing to me that we're getting so into the whole concept of search and arrest as opposed to protect and serve. But remember, Ernie, that the federal government can borrow any amount of money it wants. The other 50 states have to live within their means. And that's why you're seeing state after state, whether it's Kentucky, California, and others, Michigan, reducing dramatically their drug sentences in order to close prisons to keep the junior colleges going. New York, another one. Many states are doing it under the financial pressure because they cannot borrow money. So the progress is mostly being made at the state level, which is going to push it at the federal level.
You know, I've discussed this at length quite a bit, and it goes something like this. We're in big heap trouble, need to bail out. We're the state of, we got, you want, you, okay, here it is. Here's your bailout. Here's the money. It's already happened. Here's your billions of dollars to the state. And oh, by the way, we want you to do this, and this. And even before they were just doing direct, you know, here's money in your checking account. It was, you know, highway funds if you did that. If you had a, you know, seatbelt law, you had a helmet law, you have a this law, you have some kind of social economic engineering, then you got money from the federal government. To say that the state government doesn't have the money doesn't really matter because they're just getting it as bribery from the federal government.
That was true until the Republicans took over a year ago, and they have shut off the spigot.
Really?
And the Republican aides, the Republican officers are saying all the stimulus money, the $50-60 billion, whatever it was, extra that the Obama Democrats were giving to police, fire, teachers, et cetera, across America, that money is coming to an end, and you're seeing the states having to once again tighten their belts, and that's why we're seeing more progress at the state level. Let's keep in mind that today 100 million Americans, one-third of our population, has access to legal medical marijuana at the state level. This is a huge increase from before, and that puppy is rolling down the hill ever faster as people figure out that God's medicine is superior to the store-bought pills.
Now, we'll get into that in a minute. I'm just trying to paint a picture. It's not as they're not going to go quietly into that good night. I mean, you know,
No. Here
I got this up. It's a Battlefield U.S. Pentagon arms police departments with free heavy weaponry. In 2011 alone, the Department of Defense forked over roughly $500 million worth of military machinery to law enforcement agencies coast to coast that would have been left otherwise unused. Can't have that. In many instances, however, the goods are grabbed by sheriffs in smaller jurisdictions that don't have much need for the weaponry other than to instill fear within the community. So I'm just going, you know, they're not going to go quiet, Howard.
No.
They're not.
My biggest opponents on Capitol Hill are the lobbyists for the sheriff's department, the chiefs of police, the Fraternal Order of Police. These guys fight me tooth and nail because it's all about the money. Now, they won't talk about money. They'll talk about, well, drugs are bad, whatever. But the bottom line is, and most aides, the 95% of the aides I work with, members of Congress, they understand that the police want the money that Prohibition brings them, the $75 billion, that's local, state, federal, that you give us to enforce this Prohibition. That's what the police want. And I should point out, though, there's also an emotional component to our support for Prohibition, and that is we've all been to the funerals of officers who have died enforcing drug prohibition, and when we repeal it, like we did in 1933, officers will then have to admit that their friend they buried 6 years ago died for essentially nothing. And that is very painful, and that's another reason that cops don't want to stop the drug war, because that means all the sacrifices over the last 40 years meant nothing.
Well, they meant nothing. I mean, you know, this is, it's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. You know, this is the situation that we're in now. I see there is an enormous infrastructure that is built up about around making money. And I tell you, the two people that make the most money, it's the drug dealers and law enforcement.
Correct.
And the drug dealers, you know, I would imagine that they'd have just as much influence in the fraternal order of whatever as anybody else, because they're like, hey, man, you know, you don't get your cut if you don't have a drug war. And this is, this happens. I mean, how corrupt is law enforcement when it comes to the money that's made in the drug war? I mean, just give me, you know, is there any law enforcement jurisdiction that's not corrupt?
Oh, I'm sure there's a few, but no, you're totally correct. The other one of the corrupting factors that people don't talk about too much is civil asset forfeiture. We snatch about $4.5 billion, B-boy billion dollars a year from citizens saying, well, we didn't find any drugs on you and anything else, but you got $1,000 in cash, so you must be a drug dealer. We're going to take your money, take your car. Now, you go to court a year later and prove that you made enough money to take it to you know, have that kind of money and car. This is legalized theft, highway robbery. We take this money off people on the highway. But we are totally corrupted by the money, which is so sad. And also the desire to win, so we lie on search warrants. We lie on the witness stand. Prosecutors allow this, and it goes all the way to the into the judge level in terms of corruption. It's another reason that people have such low regard for police officers and the criminal justice system, as we've been so corrupted on so many levels by drug prohibition.
Well, I want to ask this one question. I remember, I'll tell you the story. You may even remember it. It was in the 90s, I think it was. I remember watching television. It was a Good Morning America. They made a big deal out of it, and it, of course, hit the internet and such. And it was law enforcement were stopping people on the highway, I think, that goes through Utah. And it's not, we have Flagstaff here, it's 40, and then there's one that's up higher, goes through Colorado. I'm not sure which one that is.
25.
So you had this highway going through, and people, law enforcement, were stopping people, planting drugs, and getting RICO seizures because they got a percentage of the seizure. I mean, individual sure. officers, is that true, or does that still happen?
That still happens. In fact, the former Attorney General of the United States from Missouri condoned that action, whereby in Missouri, if a police officer seizes money, they must give it up to the state, and it goes into the education fund. But if you bring out a DEA agent to the scene, give him the money, then eventually you get back 70% of all the money. So this was another way that police officers completely circumvented the law, basically in a sense broke the law, just to get more money. So to buy more toys and more overtime and
okay,
whatever
wait, wait,
else.
Wait, let me get this clear. You have the attorney general said, all right, fine, you want to seize this? We're not going to make it to where it benefits you or you get, you know, more beer parties or whatever. We're going to go ahead and take the money. It goes to the state education. Thank you for playing. They go, no. Well, we figured out there's a loophole here. If we got the DEA, the federal mm-hmm. government involved, they will take the money and they'll cut us in for 70% for calling them out to take the money.
That's Mr. Ashcroft was the man from Missouri who did that and condoned law enforcement doing it, and this is done all over the country. If the state says you must give up the money to education fund, then you simply bring in the DEA. And so for a large bust, say five figures, they always bring the DEA in order to get that money. It's disgusting.
Well, what does the local law enforcement do with this money? I mean, is there a line? I mean, I got local... Sheriff Arpaio here, he's all in, is going to get the money. He even has volunteer posse members out directing traffic while they're doing roadblock kind of stuff. They were doing this in the 90s, and they still got all kinds of weird stuff they're doing. But they were just, you know, using the cheaper help to be able to have just a few officers, because it was more economical and efficient, seizing vehicles like you wouldn't believe, and then this became a big deal. But that money goes where on the balance sheet? I mean, it has to be a line, a budget item somewhere.
It helps pay for officers' salaries. It pays for the you know, all the expenses of running a drug operation. And in Michigan, my guys would go down to Florida in January to say for a week of how to become a better drug officer and how to search cars better in January. You go to school for 4 hours in the morning and play golf all afternoon. It's called our Toy Fund. And that was just another way that works. And this goes on all over the country, up to and including, of course, padding ourselves by planting drugs on people, especially people of color and poor people, because they're the least likely to fight it hard in court.
Okay. All right. So it's bad.
It's bad.
You know, and this has been going on. I mean, it's like they took the playbook from Prohibition, you know, earlier in the century, and they just did it again. I mean, heck, mm-hmm. They already knew what was going to happen. They wanted it to happen.
I don't know if we know. You know, every generation needs to often learn the same lessons. But, you know, with a noble purpose, well, these drugs are bad, so let's make them illegal, as if that's going to make them go away. I mean, we totally ignored history, and we're still doing it today, Ernie. I mean, we've got a bill which is going through the Congress today to make the new synthetic drugs, you know, your K2s, your spice, your bath salts, a federal prohibition. It doesn't work, but we're going to federally prohibit them anyway. Again, job security and a knee-jerk reaction to anything which is bad.
Okay, who introduces this and why? Who prompts it? Who writes the legislation? And who? I mean, are the people really that supportive of this kind of crap? I mean, I don't think so. I think that something is motivating them to introduce this kind of legislation.
Well, certainly, again, political blackmail and actual money going into re-election campaigns. Congressman Dent of Pennsylvania, Republican, introduced this latest legislation in the House to make the synthetic drugs illegal. Remember, they get tremendous support from law enforcement. They look like the hero. They're tough on drugs. It certainly helps in your re-election campaign to show the voters that you're just getting tougher and tougher on drugs. Not smart, of course, but tough. And until recently, the voters are saying, "Oh, tough on drugs sounds good to me." But you know what I have done now for the last 6 years is in the Congress is I say, Congressman or aide, if you can give me one advantage, one benefit, one good outcome to any prohibition that helps anybody in America, I'll pack up my horse. I'll be back in Texas in 2 days. And 6 years later, nobody can give me one good benefit or advantage to prohibition. That's how bad it is. They have absolutely no argument, but inertia and the money and ego. Don't leave out ego. Look, how hard is it for someone to say the three hardest words in English? I was wrong.
Yeah.
And people in Washington, trust me, will throw their mother under the bus multiple times before they say, "Boy, we spent $10 billion on this project. It was a great idea. It can't fail because it was my idea. So spend $10 billion more." You know how that works.
We're under the name of the drug war and whatever else they want, you know, whatever fear they can get us. We just have now drones are cleared for domestic use across the United States.
Right.
I mean, and right after that, they're going to, you know, arm them. I mean, we're going to start having, I mean, sooner or later, mm-hmm. or freaking later, there's going to be a Hellfire missile fired in, you know, some United States of these America, and it's going to be boom, and they got the bad guy along with the rest of the wedding party. So I'm going, you know, this is it. You just know it's coming, and they're just going to, you're going to rationalize it and blah, 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 whatever way. But the thing is I'm going, all right. If we know that drug prohibition doesn't work, which, by the way, we do, okay, where do you see this going? I mean, how bad does it have to get? I mean, are they making any inroads? Because when you threaten them with electoral blackmail, that only works if the people want the drug war. I don't think they do. And every time it comes up for a vote, they don't. So I don't know where this blackmail is coming from.
Well, the people are still scared because the politicians and the government have demonized these drugs and have only put out one solution. Punish anybody criminally who does these seven drugs. And with the propaganda out there from the last drugs I was saying, marijuana was more dangerous than heroin. And some people go, "Well, the government wouldn't lie to me," and too many people believe the government lies. But and this is what keeps this thing going now, 40 years, $1 trillion, and drugs are cheaper, stronger, and easy for our kids to buy. We're missing pedophiles in chat rooms because we're flying around in helicopters, and that's what makes me crazy because I've arrested pedophiles, and I know they're loose out there. I got grandkids now in chat rooms. The American people are waking up, and like this year, the NAACP for the first time came out and said the war on drugs is bad policy. We need to end it. The LULAC and other Latino groups are saying war on drugs is bad for people of color. We're seeing more and more people step out and say, we've got to repeal this new prohibition. That's why I think within, it's like the Berlin Wall. You didn't know until almost the end it was going to fall over, and then one day it did.
Well, I'm hoping that what we're learning from this is that it's a culture shift that makes these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you don't have, you know, the people behind it, I mean, even if you did get some change, you'll just flip right back later. You know, I'm looking for the people to have this kind of understanding. And a lot of it comes from your efforts. I remember when we first became aware of you, you were riding your horse. What was the horse's name?
Misty, across, yeah.
Yeah, across the United States.
Right.
And which I think would have been very cool, by the way. You know, you should have got more video and pictures. But the going across the United States on horseback, aside from it just being freaking cool, it brought a lot of attention to this. And
right.
All of a sudden, leap, there's law enforcement against prohibition. Oh, my God. Oh, there's judges. There's prosecutors. Oh, I had no idea. Well, then you go around and you speak to a lot of different people sharing your firsthand experience. Well, that starts to change the culture. And you would think that, you know, you would get more support for this. But other than certainly at a presidential level, other than Ron Paul and Gary Johnson, I don't hear a lot of people talking about decriminalization.
No, nobody wants. This is a third rail. This is more a third rail than Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. We're actually talking about those three issues, which used to be third rail, but the prohibition, the drug war, is the new third rail. Nobody wants to touch it with at all, unless you're Newt Gingrich and says, well, just let's get tougher and arrest and kill more people. But it's actually getting worse. Even for the liberal Obama, his Justice Department has defended in the Supreme Court last month the ability for law enforcement, any law enforcement, to put a tracking device on your car to follow you 24/7 with no search warrant. It's Big Brother. It's 1984, and Democrat Obama is as worse as any other drug warrior out there, any other Republican who thinks that the government should be figuring out what you're doing 24/7.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about California for a little bit.
Sure.
Obama says, "Hey, man, I love the peoples. Okay." If you're sick and you need marijuana and the people voted in California, that's all good. You don't got anything to worry about. Me, vote for me, vote for me, pick me. Then they do. And then all of a sudden now they're shutting down California's ability to dispense marijuana. Somebody explain
liar,
this to
liar,
me.
Pants on fire.
I mean, is that as simple as it is?
It's as simple as it is. He promised us that is exactly what you said. If a state had a regulated controlled system of patients acting with their doctor to get the green medicine, that the federal government would not waste its precious resources going after people obeying state law. That held for maybe a year, and then all hell broke loose in Montana, California, and wherever else they have the resources to go after patients and dispensaries. He simply lied through his teeth to get elected. I know you're shocked.
Well, not really, but I mean, it was just, I mean, so blatant that you would think that he would keep some promise. I mean, something like that. I mean, where did the opposition to him taking that position come from? I mean, you go, okay, well, it's, you know, it's a DEA and it's a BATF and it's a this and it's a that, and they're mm-hmm. going to combine, you know, Fast and Furious and drugs and cartels and on the border in Mexico and all that. I mean, and you just step back and you look at all of it, and, you know, I know what's going on. It's the drug dealers do not want this legalized. The violence would immediately cease.
Oh, of course. You know, there are rumors, only rumors at this point, that the cartels are already putting money in the pockets of especially Republicans, some Democratic candidates and congressmen to keep the drug war going, because they are fearful, growing more every day, that the legalization movement, the repeal prohibition movement, is getting strong enough where they better start handing cash over to people who support bringing in their money, which is, of course, prohibition. I think you're going to find eventually that one of these stores will break, like a couple, 10 years ago, that Al Gore was taking $500,000 from the Chinese for whatever reason.
Yeah, so, I mean, nobody cares. They go, yeah, and? You know, people are so jaded by this. They expect this. Heck, they'd be surprised if they didn't get a story like that. You know, it's just they've tuned out, man. They don't care. There's no legitimacy to this government. Governments don't work. I want my money back. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is, how do you change the legislation up there when you're up against billions and hundreds of billions of dollars to make absolutely certain that Howard Wooldridge does not get what he wants?
Well, the only thing I've got, besides that good-looking horse, is I've got a lot of people out there in America who are supporting what I'm doing and others are doing, and they're making their voices heard at the ballot box. State after state is reducing their penalties for drugs. They're making it the lowest priority. They are approving medicinal marijuana for patients and calling for better laws on Washington just passed a law, the Good Samaritan Act, so that they can save people who are dying by calling 911 without being worried about getting arrested. These things are happening across the state. It's because people are paying us some attention and they are voting, and that's what we need, of course, more of. Pay attention and vote.
Let's talk about Mexico. I mean, how did Fast and Furious play out with this drug war? How did you get involved in that? I mean, that surprised you? I mean, how did you use that in your advocacy?
Well, I certainly the Fast and Furious was just another attempt by the ATF and whoever else to try to figure out how to stop the cartels. And I just saw a report in another magazine about four DEA agents who spent their whole life in Colombia for 30 years trying to stop cocaine, talk about how they had a success over here and a success over there. These people, as you can imagine, are between delusional and being on a holy war crusade that even if I don't finish it, I'll hand off the job to my son, as if another 30 years of prohibition is going to make a difference. But the law enforcement in this country, as we've seen, cannot come to grips with the idea that this is bad policy, one for money, one for emotional, to the point where now there's been case after case. There's been four or five well-published cases where when a current law enforcement professional speaks out, a police officer, an agent, a probation officer, they get fired. And so we are kicking back our own people for daring to exercise the First Amendment. Another just terrible development in this whole sordid affair.
Well, there's a case just recently of, I don't know, you probably know more about it than I do, but there was a Border Patrol agent. He pulls his pickup up to another guy talking, chit-chatting, you know, this mm-hmm. all this drug war, Mexican cartel violence, all crap would go away. They decriminalize drugs or at least mm-hmm. marijuana or something. He mentions LEAP or some organizations mm-hmm. like yours and supporting it. He said, you know what, your services are no longer required.
Yeah, that guy was actually into it. He's almost ending his probationary period. All excellent reports. And then about 2 months after he made that, just a common, I mean, I've pulled up to patrol cars all my life. And you shoot the breeze and talk about whatever. And he just made a off the comment, you know, hey, you know, legalization would solve a lot of these problems with the border. And 2 months later, he was dragged in there and say, are you a terrorist? And if you are, who do you work for? Well, the first words out of the investigators go, what? And they use this idea that if you believe in legalization, you are possibly a terrorist. which is, of course, absurd.
No, I don't believe that they do. I think they may say that and do it. And that's their technique. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, if they think that you're a terrorist because you want to end the violence and this is so obvious what's going on here, I think they're just scumbag pieces of crap. That's what I think.
Hey, understand, in the law enforcement community, there are holy warriors in this thing. They look at the drug war as a jihad, and no matter what wrong they do, God will still let them go to heaven because they're doing God's work. I mean, I've met these people. They are bonkers.
You know, I'll give you a perfect example here. The county attorney, you know, this is a good point. You should watch this. There was a debate between Maricopa County Attorney Bill Montgomery. Now, he was a tank commander in Gulf War I, I think. And he's just, he's all, man, you know, if we just had more firepower, give me my tanks, I'll fix the drug war. I mean, he's one of those guys. So he's kind of, you know, a hand in glove along with Sheriff Arpaio, how tough can we get, vote for me and God's work kind of thing. Exactly describe the kind of person you're talking about. Now, what happened was, long story how it came about, but Mark Victor, my partner in the Freedom Summit, he's a criminal defense attorney here. He's very well known. Heavy duty against drug war, even though he makes a boatload of money because of it. Well, what happens is he goes, you know, I've always wanted to debate a prosecutor or judge publicly. He's spoken at him at different, you know, functions. You know, he's a speaker, but he's like, man, I want to debate. Let's go. Well, somehow they're both of them graduated from Arizona State University as part of the Federalist Society, which is some kind of future lawyer thing.
Right.
So they asked them to come. Would you come? Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. They figure they're in the same club or something, right? So they go and they have this room. I said, you guys are going to need a bigger room than what you guys got planned if we're going to promote this. So sure enough, they had to move into the big auditorium, man. Hundreds of people, and it's just packed. Well, of course, Bill Montgomery, the county attorney, I don't want it recorded, you know? Yeah, well, come arrest me because I'm recording it. So we put it up. Now, I didn't put a lot of, you know, his up there. I just put when he started to speak and, you know, towards the end as it segued into Mark out of respect for his wishes. But certainly Mark's presentation was up there. This was the first time that we had, certainly here, where you had a criminal defense attorney against the drug war going up against a county attorney for it. And it was a slam dunk, obvious, just slap him around. But he did exactly what you just said. You know, as a moral society and Christian-based, Judeo-Christian foundation, a country kind of got to go, and God says, drug war. And I'm going, seriously? I mean, you seriously believe that? Of all the ill, all the bad, all the stuff that happens from it, that is not a pretend. And this is one thing that came out. Bill Montgomery comes up and he says, Well, we don't really have that many people because Mark had said how many people were incarcerated due to this drug war. Oh, no, we don't have that many. That's right. And Mark came out and he goes, to say that is a lie. And the reason it was a lie is that they'll use some kind of a plea or they'll say, well, we're going to get you the drug thing. If you'll plead to this, you know, assault or this possession to something else over here or paraphernalia or whatever crap, they'll drop the drug part charge of it to do. So, of course, it's drug war.
Sure.
For them to say that is a lie. So, yeah, I can see yeah, these kind of people exist, but I'm looking at them. I'm watching them. I can't believe they really, really believe this, or they're just they got this cognitive dissonance thing going on in their head to where they can't reconcile it, but they've so invested in it, and it's just to get elected or the people that give them money that something. I don't know, but it's not rational.
No, prohibition, of course, is not rational, and it's absolutely out there. You saw it firsthand. The good news is that a lot of times today, when someone says, "Let's have a debate on the drug war and prohibition," and they'll get a leap speaker out there, and all of a sudden, when the prosecutor or the chief of police, the sheriff finds out he's going to be debating another law enforcement professional, and the issue is about not about how bad drugs are, because what leap speakers do and what I do every time is say, I agree, these drugs are dangerous, deadly, they can kill people, they can ruin your lives. That's all true. Now let's discuss whether prohibition is a superior policy to legal, regulated, and taxed. And then a lot of times I've had them cancel, say, well, I'm not going to debate prohibition. I want to debate, you know, how bad drugs are. And so it's getting more and more difficult for people to put together a debate because when they find out it's another cop or prosecutor or judge that's going to debate them on prohibition, they don't want to show up.
You know, and that's the one thing, seriously, that we were the most concerned about, is that this would be canceled, they wouldn't show. So we went through a whole big, you know, got them commit an email that they were going to do, you know, all this kind of stuff, and then publicized that, made a big deal out of it, so they couldn't cancel. And I'm like, oh, heck no. And one of the other things that came up is that the county attorneys have to enforce some of the laws here that are decriminalized a lot of this stuff, you know, here in Arizona. And that, so he would actually say, well, I can't talk on, you know, I'm forced by, you know, the people that made me do, or I wouldn't, you know, he's like making it obvious that he's not in support of the law, but right. Well, I have to because, you know, to keep my job kind of thing. And I'm just going, this is, you know, this is a good point. You're the guy to talk to this about. Okay, here we go. Occupy Phoenix. They had the guys, it was October 15th or something. We went down there the first day, you know, met with all the people, you know, word up, you know, this is how this is going to go down. You had a bunch of libertarians and Ron Paul people there and even some Tea Party and everything. And about 20 to 30% of them were this hardcore socialist, we want more, tax the rich kind of people.
Right.
And so we're going, yeah, whatever. So we made some new friends and passed out stuff and made it, you know, clear to them what was going to happen. The park was to, and I'll make my point here, bear with me. The park was to close at like 6 p.m., and it was downtown across from the city hall. So what they did is they said, no, it's closing, so you can't be here. Well, of course, they didn't want them downtown. They didn't want them to occupy, and they didn't want the press to see or whatever. But we'll escort you over to this other park a mile or two away, this big open area out away from everything. We'll escort you over there, and you can stay there later because it doesn't close until 10, 11 or something. And it was better for camping or whatever anyway. So they're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, thank you. That was very nice of you. I'm going, you guys know what they're going to do, right? This is like Brooklyn Bridge stuff. They're going to take you there and arrest you. It's easier. I go, they go, well, no, they've been pretty nice. I go, no, that this is fine. You guys do whatever. Well, we documented it, videotaped it, had a show about it, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
During the process, they were disarming everybody, even though it's legal here in Arizona. They're just making it up as they were going along. No, no guns, and you can't this, and you can't say that. You can't be here, and all this kind of stuff. I know a lot of these law enforcement that are their consumer, what they call it, community relations guys. You know, they're, what they call it, the confrontation prevention squads and all that kind of crap. So I'm talking to these guys, and I can see they're newer guys. They were different. Some of the older guys were there, but some of their supervisors have changed. And they were put there by the fusion centers. They are coordinating through these multi-jurisdictional fusion, homeland security, we rule you top down, you got your orders kind of people. Okay. So as they were doing it, of course, they arrested them and everything. Later, they went back, and then a lot of press happened, and we were causing a stir, and they finally, okay, you can stay here for a while and all that. So Phoenix hasn't had the problems of a lot of other places because they kind of backed off a little bit. But the point is that I'm going, okay, who are these people representing? Who are the orders coming from? Where is it? So we started communicating with the city council. And the question that I had with them was very simple. I go, I just need to know if these local law enforcement, what this whole thing is about, you always got to keep your law enforcement local and under the control of the community. If they're not taking direction from the city council, if they're not taking direction from the mayor and your representative at a local level, your wards or assemblymen or whatever they call them in different places, city council here, if they're not taking direction from the people that we elect and they're doing it from some central command, Washington people said whatever, that is the definition of a police state. We are no longer in charge anymore and you don't matter. I just need to know. Do you have control of your local law enforcement, yes or no? They don't want to answer that question. And I'm seeing the drug war. I'm seeing this Occupy. So I'm seeing as we devolve economically. I'm seeing as we have problems here, more and more the direction is coming from somewhere other than the local community. So it doesn't matter what the law is. It doesn't matter what the policy is. It doesn't matter what you vote. These guys are being armed up by the Pentagon. They got all kinds of... any and everything you could possibly ask for, including drones. We have helicopters that have, $500,000 helicopters that are remote control with all kinds of cameras and whatever and surveillance stuff and reading whatever, with sheriff's departments right now in Texas. You have, so I'm going, I don't see how this plays out, Howard. I don't see, how this is going to, all of a sudden the people are going to represent their wishes and they're going to be followed by their government. It's past that.
Well, you're right, and it started, the first time I knew about it was Katrina. I mean, I'm a member of the National Rifle Association. I've seen the films of local police officers in New Orleans getting the orders to disarm American citizens in the city of New Orleans and going door to door to door. There's a camera that was allowed to go.
When they needed them the most.
Disarming American citizens of their firearms. And the fact that local police were cooperating with the federal authorities to do that is scary times 10. And I tell you, I'm happy I'm 60 and not 20 because it's going to get tougher before it gets easier. My big hope is, Ernie, that the Tea Party folks especially who understand this stuff profoundly will understand that no matter what your feelings are about drugs, and drugs are dangerous, you know, be careful with drugs, don't do drugs, the prohibition is a gateway opportunity for the government, whether it's Democratic control like today or Republican tomorrow, to take ever more freedom away from us, and we should be kicking back as hard as we can, as fast as we can.
Well, this also applies to the industrial prison complex or whatever.
Well,
you know,
sure.
I mean, you know, talk to me about what you know about that. I mean, this is starting to become its own special interest that has enormous influence in from every point on the political spectrum. You have local communities that need the money. You have money that's getting fed into somebody's making a profit that can afford a lobbyist to get the, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, mm-hmm. they need prisoners.
Yeah, there was a prison up in New York that was begging the governor not to close it because, look, the prisoners were coming out and doing all kinds of fantastic free work inside the community and the county and into the worth millions and millions of dollars. And they were begging the governor, saying, please don't close the prison because we need the free labor. These prisoners are working for 35, 40 cents an hour. It's slave labor. But when you take a person with, and there's a fair number, with the 2.3 million in prison, a number of them have college degrees, and they were, you know, guys were in college selling marijuana or whatever else got caught. They make wonderful customer service reps for banks and whatever else at 30 cents an hour. So, there's, again, this is just another one of those undercurrents of people profiting from the massive incarceration of American people, and they want to keep that gravy train going. Sure.
I don't see a fix other than a cultural rejection of government in general. I mean, if it just going back local, have anything to do with Fed next? Well, you get this from them if you next. If you'll only next. I mean, you know, I don't see a solution that's going to originate in Washington. I mean, I'll tell you, Howard, it goes like this. People will say, well, you know, the terrorists on the southern, we got to protect, and they're going to come in and get, you know, if I was a terrorist, they're not going to stop me, okay? I mean, I don't know. This is all just, you know, quit pissing people off. You wouldn't have these problems. But they come in there. They're going to come in and go do what? To Washington? What do they need, a map? I'm going, they're over there, man. Go.
and the irony, of course, is that the tunnels used to smuggle drugs, terrorists or whatever else, easier than any other way to get into the country. You know, it's amazing to talk to people who are so serious about the war for prohibition, but they hate the fact that terrorists are out to kill Americans. And, of course, the United Nations has reported for 20 years that the single largest source of money for terrorists, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, all over the world, is drug money. So the policy they support actually funds our mortal enemies. And at some point, we need some critical thinking out there. People going, you know, it doesn't matter how much you hate drugs. It's a question of, do you really want to keep putting billions and billions of dollars into the hands of the Taliban so they can blow our troops up?
Yeah, no. Howard, I mean, how far off am I when I, you know, there's a sentiment out there of which I increasingly, you know, share, is that my biggest threat doesn't come from some 13-year-old willing to strap on bombs in Afghanistan. It doesn't come from some, you know, drug cartel in Mexico, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't come from, you know, all these threats and hell and damnation and asteroids and whatever. It comes from Mordor on the Potomac, okay? It comes from them. They are the terrorists. They are the threat. They are the ones that all the hobgoblins that they put out there is going to, you know, kill us. We're all going to die. You know, they create them and then offer themselves a solution, of course. You know, so I'm going, this is, how is it that you can be in Washington and look these guys straight in the face and not just, you know, I don't know. Why would you even do it?
You know, people say, "Well, how did you prepare yourself to be a lobbyist? I mean, a police officer." I said, "Look, police officers, most of us have the discipline not to hurt people who need to be hurt, or as we say in Texas, some people need killing, and the mark of a good police officer is not to hurt people who need to be hurt." And so, yes, I must have the patience of Job to deal with these people in Washington. And police work was great training to be a lobbyist because you have to understand you can't hurt these people, even when you want to put your hands around their neck.
Well, maybe when you went through training.
Is the problem.
Well, maybe when you went through training, but there's a lot of people now, they're being trained to hurt people.
I understand. I'm from the old school. I'm 60, and when I went to police work, it was protect and serve. We worked on public safety, not personal safety. My job was to catch bad guys trying to hurt you. Charlie Sheen, you know, that's on him. I learned completely the government cannot fix stupid. But yet, society has my profession out there still trying to fix a Charlie Sheen or a Rush Limbaugh or a Snoop Dogg or Willie Nelson by saying, no matter, even if you're doing this in the privacy of your own home as an adult, we're going to invade your home and put you in jail for your own good. That is communism. I've been to the Eastern Bloc when there was the Berlin Wall. This is communism. And with the drug war, it's a great segue into a communist dictatorship, because the government is here to protect you from your own stupidity and to the point of putting you in jail. It's very scary.
Well, not only that, they're conditioning us even at a very young age. I had a friend of mine. I mean, you say protect and serve. They don't even put that on the vehicles anymore.
You're right.
You know?
They don't.
So now I'm going, because that's not their job, protect and serve you, you know? And so I'm going, all right, but where do we see protect and serve? A friend of mine's out shopping for Christmas last week or a couple weeks ago with his young son, 6, 7 years old. He has two sons. So he's out there and he goes, Ernie, you got to see this. And he sends me a text of a picture of a Tonka truck that has police on the side. It says, police, protect and serve truck. Pulling a checkpoint ahead sign, okay? And then it says in the description, it goes, yes, with cutout figures so you can create your own action scenes, you know? And what are they teaching 5, 6 years old? Down on the ground, some bitch, you don't give your hands behind you. I mean, I'm just, oh, gosh. And then what did we have last year? You know, years ago, same thing. It's Legos having TSA checkpoints. You know, I'm like, seriously? You know, so who are these 6 son of, oh, man. So you're dealing with, you know, this indoctrination that's coming up from some, I have no idea, but you're looking at the congressman in the face, and they're just, yeah, Howard, I mean, come on, give me some of the backroom discussions, because they got to know that you're right, and that they're just not going to support what you're doing, and they need to be backhanded.
Yes, yes. Congressman Rohrabacher, good man from California, Republican, said it a couple of years ago, if the Congress could take a secret vote, marijuana prohibition is over today. And let me just add that in terms of my optimism from a few minutes ago, his historic bill was introduced this year by Barney Frank and Ron Paul, the repeal of Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act of 2011. For the first time since the federal government imposed upon all states their federal prohibition of marijuana, there is a bill to repeal it. No, it only has 20 co-sponsors, but it is historic, and we will build upon that in the future as we go forward. And I say, and if we go into a depression, a D. David depression, Ernie, that my job will go much faster.
Why do you think?
Because the lack of money. The states are just being crushed by about the $54 billion a year they spend to house all the drug war prisoners.
Don't care.
Huh?
It's not how much money is spent. It's like the wars. It's who gets the money.
The state governments, like I say, from Michigan to California to others, Kentucky, are reducing their drug sentencing to help local jails empty out their cells.
Oh, I hope, you know, things happen as you're optimistic about. I don't see it stopping. I see it imploding. You know, I don't see it to be a logic, reasoned decision that we're, oh, this is not working. Like they didn't have enough evidence already.
Well, it's a question of, I mean, most people today, majority of people now would treat marijuana like beer, legalize, regulate, and tax. But they've got to get out there, make their voices heard, go to the town meetings, and tell their politicians where they want to go with this. Because the politicians and the power and the money in Washington depend on most people not being aware and not voting.
I don't think people, from my experience, I've been doing this a long time, and my experience is that people don't trust the system. They know it's corrupt.
Sure.
They don't trust the computers. They don't trust the the selection. They don't trust how it got on the ballot. They don't trust it. They don't trust the legislation when they do pass it. Here in Arizona, they just passed this supposedly, legalizing marijuana for whatever, but it had so much crap in it that, it was just a pharmaceutical bill. It came down to this. Here in Arizona, for you to get medicine to a patient, he would have to go to a dispensary. Well, that dispensary has to have the link as part of their business, a place to grow it and distribute it. And you couldn't just be like you bought it from a wholesaler. No, you had to be the entire thing. Well, who's that written for? Big Pharma.
Well, we're all doing the best we can. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, although Arizona allows, if you're not within 25 miles of a dispensary, you can grow your own. And I know several who are growing their own in Arizona today.
It's in kind of this gray area. I mean, because they haven't allowed a dispensary to open, well, then nobody's within 25 miles.
Everybody gets to grow their own.
Well, kind of. I mean, and then there was a gentleman here that's growing his own. Another patient goes, "Hey, I hear you got. I want to come, and I'm going to buy me some." And at least he was smart enough to carry a firearm with him. But they were trying to rob him, and kills him. And then they go, "Oh, I'm sorry. If you get one of these licenses to grow marijuana and have all this valuable resource available here, you're not allowed to have a gun."
Oh, another Obama Justice Department initiative. They have denied selling guns and ammunition to patients in Montana. There's a case coming up in Nevada where a person who's a registered patient could not buy a gun. And so we're waiting for the NRA, the National Rifle Association, to weigh in on this. Somebody needs to defend the gun rights in this country, and usually it's the NRA or the Gun Owners of America, somebody. But
I wouldn't hold my breath for the NRA. The NRA is just National Republican Apologists, man. They're just doing whatever the Republicans tell them.
Okay.
Who are we kidding?
Well, that's what I say. But these are the issues that our people are facing, and the way to end so many of these problems is to just get rid of prohibition.
I'm with you, brother. I'm trying to, I tell you, this has been a main issue for me whenever I've run for Congress and Senate and, local and statewide and, blah, blah, blah. And, I'm right up front. Yep, in drug war. Done, 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 done. Because, you're not going to win as a libertarian. At the time, they're worried about whether I give a crap about the vote totals or not. I'm looking to change a culture to bring ideas in there. Well, if you know that this position on decriminalizing drugs, ending the prohibition, is going to be the massive popular supported concept out there, then why wait? I mean, get an early start. Be against drugs, drug war when being against drug war was cool. I mean, before it was even cool. So I don't have a problem with that. The problem is that I'm beginning to see, especially over the last probably three or four election cycles, that the electoral process, our republic, all this is a distraction. It's not going to be the mechanism by which it is fixed. They may. I mean, the only way that I can see that they would allow Dr. Paul to become president is if they feel that that is the only way that they're going to be allowed to have any government at all, to give it legitimacy, to go, okay, you don't have to storm the ramparts, anymore. You can stop now. Dr. Paul is the president. It's all fixed. And I'm going, even then I'd be like, yeah. But that's the only way I can see that they would ever go towards more freedom like this is if it's the only way they can maintain their very existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you may very well be right. It's beyond what I normally deal with. But I just know that I've been at this for now 14 years, wear my T-shirt, "Cops say legalize pot, ask me why." And today, no matter where I go in the country, almost everybody is nodding their head, saying yes, way to go, and more thumbs up as we speak.
I agree, and I think you've been very effective in doing that. That's why I love having you on. We can talk and get updated on this. But I mean, what are we seeing in the headlines now? Somebody actually takes your position that's in law enforcement on the Border Patrol. Boom, you're out. You're fired. They actually, the people vote in various states across the country. They get a promise as a campaign promise by a guy running for president that won based on many of these types of promises, reneges on his promise, goes in, takes the medicine away from people that need it. You know, the heck with the state sovereignty, the heck with the, you know, just logic and reason. You have all of these law enforcement agencies that are corrupt to the freaking gills. You have, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And I'm looking for the bright light, of course, is the cultural shift. The people, they are making this. And I'm looking for somewhere in Washington, D.C., where is the crack? Where is it? I mean, in Washington, I don't see anything. Tell me, what are you experiencing? What law changes? What's changed? They're not, you know, they're still given military grade equipment, you know, for free to all these local people. I mean, everywhere I look, it's worse out of Washington. Where is it better out of Washington?
In Washington itself, the only crack we're seeing here for the first time ever on this Ron Paul Barney Frank bill to repeal the four members of the Congressional Black Caucus, including John Conyers, the head of the Criminal Justice Committee, have signed on to the bill to repeal. The NAACP has condemned the war on drugs. This is a big change for them. And these are some of the cracks that I see, which are going to push this in the next five odd years into a win column. It's not going to happen today or tomorrow, but the cracks are out there all over the place. And law enforcement will fight this thing as long as they can, just like they did. I'm sure they did in 1932, but this time it's worse because we make so much money and we have so much invested in the prohibition. But the cracks are out there, Ernie, and that's why I work hard, 7 days a week in the belly of the beast to push the Congress in the right direction.
No, I'm glad you're there. I don't want to give the impression I'm not glad you're there, giving them what for, and you're one of the guys to do it. But I just. I'm looking for, where I would spend my time. And congressman, last on my freaking list, man. that's your job. Hey, well, thanks for spending time with us, you know, and kind of, you know, letting us know where we're at. Because I know you and I are in agreement on this whole thing, but it's just, I you know, it's better you than me, man. I'm glad you're there doing this for us. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I enjoy it. I think I know I'm making some serious inroads, especially with the staffers, and that when the time comes that the nation's ready for this, we can do it a whole lot faster in Washington for the efforts of myself and another half dozen people.
No, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. I mean, all of a sudden, it'll just be boom.
The Berlin Wall fell down one day.
Yep. You know, it might be right after Ron Paul wins Iowa and New Hampshire.
God bless. I've been out there with my horse for Ron Paul and working the street corners, and I'll do what I can to, you know, as a man and a horse to help my country.
Thank you very much, Howard. You want to give out the websites and some programs you want the people to know about? Make sure they can check you out.
Yeah, please go to citizensopposingprohibition.org. Take a look at the website. If you want to really be active, you know, buy a T-shirt, $20. Moms, dads, nurses. Grandma, Grandpa says legalize pot. Ask me why. A lot of fun on it. I got a lot of free beer from bartenders. But mostly register, vote, and tell your congressman and your state and local officials how you feel at town meetings. Go participate.
Thank you very much, Howard Wooldridge from Citizens Opposing Prohibition. You know, because if he's not in Washington, that means somebody else needs to be, and I don't know anybody better than him. So I'm glad he's doing it. One less thing I got to do. Thanks very much for coming on, Howard. We'll be right back with you soon with another interview here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Go find us on iTunes.